Yes, a very good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, October 5. Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. And you probably just heard that weather forecast. It is not good. Not good to say the least, particularly on the weekend. Today, already around Sydney at least, the rain is coming. Up to 20 mils forecast, but up to 30 mils Saturday and 45 mils on Sunday. Loz, morning to you, mate. It's just been absolutely relentless.
It has, Mido. You know what? I'm worried about Saturday's races. I'm really concerned about the track. We're about to get all this type of rain over the next couple of days, and there's a big deluge coming on Saturday as well. So I don't know whether the track will be able to hold it all or whether it'll hold up during the day, but fingers crossed we'll be able to have the races there on Saturday. But it's not good. It's a stay inside the next couple of days and look after yourself, and in particular in those flood zones. Hopefully people have as well prepared as they possibly can be, and we don't get that type of rain. But if we do, hopefully people will be well prepared as they possibly can be.
You wonder if the ATC and Racing New South Wales might take a preemptive strike. They've done it before, and I don't know if they, like you mentioned yesterday, maybe they do take the punt and go, well, let's do Rose Hill this week, give the track a break for Everest Day, because then they've got another two meetings at Randwick anyway before they head back to Rose Hill after that.
Well, that's the key, isn't it? You want the track to be good for Everest Day, and hopefully the weather will be better next week. But it's a good day on Sunday. I don't know whether they postpone it till...
No, Sunday's
Sunday?
Bad.
Oh, Sunday's bad. Wasn't
Sunday's
it?
Bad.
Oh, Sunday's bad.
Monday's when we get the
Monday's
relief.
When we start to get the relief. Yeah. Oh, right, geez. Yeah, I don't know. I think we've just got to sit back and wait and see. I don't know whether you can change it at the last moment or whether you just postpone it. But whatever happens, I'm sure they'll make the right decision.
Hopefully so. By the way, no pup today. He wasn't feeling great yesterday. And he's succumbed, Loz. He's succumbed. So hopefully he'll be...
Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow.
Look after himself. Back tomorrow.
A little bit dusty yesterday, but hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. I'll tell you what, game of cricket on tonight. Australia taking on the West Indies in a T20 warm-up. They're not at full strength, West Indies. They had to leave a bloke at home. Well, he failed to jump on the plane.
Missed the plane, got sacked from the squad.
Jeez.
Do you reckon they were calling his name over the PA? Hetmeyer.
Hetmeyer. Where are you, sir?
Have you had that done before?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had it done only recently.
Not a good feeling, is it?
I had it done recently. When we were coming back from Kosciuszko.
Oh, down in...
From the Kosciuszko, yes.
Well, you flew back from Canberra?
Flew back from Canberra. Yeah,
and you've had L. Daly come over the PA at Canberra Airport.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. My daughter was going to Melbourne with a boyfriend, and she was in Canberra Airport. So when I drove back to Canberra, she turned up, and I went and had a cup of tea with her in the terminal. And then we got talking, and then I heard her name, and I had to bolt to the gate. So... As you do at airports, you can get carried away talking and you forget about your flight.
Not a good feeling,
Not
is
a
it?
Good feeling, no.
No. What about one of your old teammates there at the Raiders, Loz? The City Morning Herald reported yesterday that the pitch invader during the grand final on Sunday night, who was arrested by police, was former Raider Mark McClendon. He was protesting against all environmental matters. He was wearing his footy boots as well, just to get, you know, some extra traction there. He managed to rip off one of the goalpost pads, had a bike lock around his neck as well. So we've seen a few protests, particularly in soccer, football, of that ilk, when some people like to, you know, lock themselves against the post, etc. So he's getting given a $5,000 fine and banned from going to games. But Mark McClendon, there you go. There's a blast from the past, Loz.
Oh, certainly was. Look. I'm all for people protesting, but please, really, at sporting events, and you know, people that do that and stop traffic in peak hour and things like that, it's ridiculous. Surely they can make their protest a lot better by doing it in a march that's been organised rather than running onto a field during a grand final. They were lucky that the play was down the other end and he didn't stop the game. you know, I know everyone's got their different thoughts on climate change, but there's better ways to go about protesting than running onto the field and making a goose of yourself.
Yeah, he says, and I love his the contradiction in his quotes in this article in the Herald, says that he really didn't want to take the moment away from the players on the field and, you know, how big an occasion it was for them, but, you know, just couldn't ignore the cause that he's trying to...
But I think he gets a lot more people offside when they do stunts
exactly
like this.
That's exactly right.
That's what I feel like. As I said, I think people have got their right to protest. People have got their own opinions on climate change, and not everyone agrees on it. But surely there's better ways to make a statement than to run out onto the field on grand final day and try and lock yourself onto a goalpost.
Yeah. Anyway, thankfully, he didn't completely stop the game. Unfortunately, like the idiot that you had to deal with that time during Origin
2013,
loss.
You just reminded me.
Unbelievable.
Of that. Yeah. That was right at the end of the game, too.
Right at the end of the game with the game up for grabs. Yeah. The series
up for grabs.
I mean, I can only imagine what was going through your head in the coach's box at that time.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't have wanted a camera inside there.
No.
But I just don't get the protesters doing it on that stage. If it's well organised and you want to protest, go for your life. But don't disrupt sporting events. Don't disrupt people's everyday, you know, life when they're driving to work with traffic stoppages and holding the cities to ransom. I just don't understand. I think it does more harm than good.
You would have played with him, the last couple of years of your career, I think, there at the Raiders, Mark
McClinton. I think I played with him, when he first came into grade, whatever that was, probably 98.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, his first year in first grade, if there was an Australian team picked at the end of that year, or a tour, I should say, probably a tour, I think he would have went away.
He was flashy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a touch footy background.
Hmm.
So he had speed, he had good skill. Quite tough for a little bloke. He wasn't real big.
Hmm.
But I see he's been living up there in Mullumbimby. He's grown the hair long. He had a good career. And his first couple of years with the Raiders were quite strong.
Hmm. I want to give a really good shout out this morning to Ned Brockman. I've been following his running on Instagram. So Ned Brockman decided to run from one side of Australia to the other, from the West Coast to the East Coast, trying to do it within 50 days. So it's around 100 Ks a day. And he's closing in after starting in the West on the New South Wales border laws. And you can donate, by the way, he's raising money for homelessness. And he's putting up daily updates. So he's just completed yesterday, day 34. Day 34, he ran 100.15 kilometres as he gets towards that New South Wales border. I've read his post. Now, how about his post yesterday? Was it yesterday? It might have been the day before, but just some of the pain
I can't believe
that this bloke is going through.
I can't believe it. A lot of people would struggle to run 100K in 10 days, let alone one day. And it's such a great cause, you know, for homelessness and for 50 days... To run for, that's a lot of kilometres.
Yeah, so this
this
is yesterday. I was reading this earlier. I'll read this. This is from his Instagram post. At the 20-kilometre mark today, I broke down so bad. I cried and cried and cried. I was so scared, felt incredibly vulnerable, had all my team around, but I was honestly just so in my head and was dead set petrified. My body was screaming at me. I really didn't think it was possible to keep going. Then, you know, his mate smacked him, told him to suck it up, only 2 weeks until he pulls off the unthinkable, etc. But the ailments he's dealing with his body, as he runs upwards of 100 kilometres a day for 50 days.
Well, you talk about pushing yourself through the pain barrier. He's doing that. He's been tested physically. He's been tested mentally. He's got good support around him, but you can only imagine what he's going through. In his darkest times, when he feels like pulling out and when he feels like giving up, he just continues to keep running. I don't know how he does it, because you can only imagine the stress on his feet, his knees, his whole body would be aching. He'd be in so much pain, yet the cause is that strong. He wants to continue to keep pushing himself, challenging himself. So if people can donate, please do. But that's an unbelievable effort.
Yeah, we will, when it's all said and done, we will get him on the show for sure. He's obviously got plenty of media following him through this journey as well. But his website, for those who want to donate, so he's raising money for homelessness, nedsrecordrun.com. Ned, that's double D on the Ned. nedsrecordrun.com. He says he's pretty sure he's fractured a metatarsal. Now, I've broken that bone in your foot. You can't put any pressure on your foot, so I don't know how he's doing that.
Well, not for 100K.
No.
And not consistently every day. He'd be hallucinating with it when he's running. He'd be battling all types of ailments. He'd be just be challenged like no one else has been challenged, and he's just pushing himself. He's got to be one mentally strong dude.
Next level. Incredible. The Panthers' fallout continues from their premiership success, and back page of the Daily Telegraph, Martin's place. Panthers warned not to risk letting premiership hero go to market. There's a stack of players, many high-profile players, set to come off contract at the end of next year so they can talk to clubs from November 1, other clubs, and one of those is Liam Martin, although the Sydney Morning Herald's reporting that Martin and the club are closing in on a three-year extension, despite interest from Parramatta, reportedly. Trent Barrett is Martin's cousin. Both Tamora boys, aren't they, Loz? Down sort of your way, down there in the southern area of New South Wales. But again, we were talking about it yesterday. I mean, potentially he was in a battle with Sean Lane for that kangaroo spot, and he well and truly rubber-stamped his place with his performance on Sunday night.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And Alan Ganey has said that, you know, they don't want him to go to open market because they're a chance of losing him if he does. And we've said it for a while now, when you're in a successful club, you tend to take unders to stay. But what happens is there's a lot of other clubs that look for certain individuals, and if they're looking for back rowers, Liam Barton is one of the highest profile back rowers on the open market. So if he comes on the open market, then you've got a club there sitting with a lot of money to attract him to your organisation. So that's what Penrith are up against. And then it's a matter of whether Martin decides to take less to stay in a successful organisation, or he wants to take the money and go to another club and try and help turn them into a premiership winning force. But, you know, this is the challenge that Penrith will face. It's the challenge that the Roosters have faced, the Storm have faced, all the good sides recently. They tend to lose players after a grand final. So Penrith are going through it at the moment. They lost a couple last year, they lost a couple. They'll lose a couple this year again with Kikau and Coruscant moving on. And this will be a regular theme for them if they continue to have the success we all anticipate they'll have.
And for these players, it is that acceptance, isn't it, Loz, that if you want to stay in this environment, you're going to have to accept that we're all going to have to take a little bit less to keep this together. I remember Manly had sort of a gentleman's agreement with each other, didn't they? That team of about 12 years ago after they won their premiership in 2011.
Yep.
And they had, you know, the Stewarts, Watmo, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. And they all sort of had a bit of a gentleman's agreement with each other. Let's keep this together and take a bit less.
Yeah, they did. But I think with the increase of the salary cap too, I think that makes it harder because the players will then demand a bit more money. And then it's always difficult. It's a difficult job managing a salary cap roster, and you've got to remember that you've got to get it right, because if you play overs and you have far too many players on high money or big deals, you could wreck your setup there for a period to come. We've seen a lot of teams get their salary cap out of whack, and it can take a number of years then to claw your way back. So you've got to be really strategic in the way you go about signing players. You've got certain values you place on them. You've got to understand what you've got coming through as well, and in what year you expect and anticipate those players to be playing first grade. So it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. You've got to make it all fit. But all those Penrith players, once you start winning competitions, as an individual, you're worth a lot more.
Yeah, Crichton, To'o, Spencer Lenu's another one I think that Penrith are going to have to try and keep.
Gee, he was good too, Spencer Lenu.
Superb. I think Crichton's going to be the difficult one for them, Loz, because he wants to play fullback.
Well, as a centre, what do you pay a centre? What type of money are you going to... And when you're paying, you know, $1 million to Cleary, Isaiah Yeo's money will go up, Liam Martin's money will go up, all the players will go up, and then you've got a guy like Stephen Crichton that's playing as a centre. He's not going to play fullback. Dylan Edwards' money will go up. You can't pay a centre 800. Well, Penrith certainly won't be able to pay him 800. Whereas on the open market, a club will pay him 800 to go and play fullback.
Mm.
That'll be the difficulty with Stephen Crichton trying to re-sign with Penrith.
Also back page of the Sydney Morning Herald, better than Brandy. Cleary hailed as Penrith's greatest ever halfback. And we had a chat about this yesterday as the debate rages about where this Penrith side sits, where Nathan Cleary sits in the club's pecking order. And even in this article with the Herald, the likes of Greg Alexander and Craig Gower, previous premiership halfbacks there at the club, and captains as well, have come out and said that, well, basically Nathan Cleary is the best halfback the club's ever had. Alexander goes on to say that he will soon be Penrith's greatest ever player, but also goes on to say how he was, what you were saying yesterday, Loz, a much different player. Brandy says, I was a different player.
Definitely. When you look at highlights of Greg Alexander, he would do things that Nathan Cleary couldn't do. And Nathan is a completely different player to Greg Alexander. And anyone that saw Brandy play, he was one of the most naturally gifted footballers you have ever seen. He had blistering speed. He could chip and chase. He could do things that just you sat back and just watched and just went, wow, what a player he is. Nathan Cleary is more that control, starting to get his running game in order. Fantastic guy in a tight situation because he never loses his head. He's always very calm and always making right decisions. But the big one for Cleary now would just be to go on and add to what he's already achieved. You know, win more premierships, play more first grade, play more Origins and for Australia, and then solidify his legacy because, you know, he's on the verge of becoming their greatest ever player with what he's already done so early in his career.
Back page of the Australian and, you know, obviously NRL clubs, quite a few. The Tigers come to mind, get bagged for their administration, etc. But I don't think a club's gone through more turmoil this year in Australian sport, or particularly in recent times, than the Essendon Football Club and the AFL, Loz. So their new chief executive has lasted one day in the job after, well, the Herald Sun this week published a sermon. So he was part of, or has been part of a church there in Melbourne, in Victoria. And they've found some sermon that he delivered in this church. His name's Andrew Thorburn, the new chief executive of Essendon. A sermon where he delivers controversial views on abortion and homosexuality as well. So the Essendon board, and this came after, of course, that they got rid of the previous chairman and CEO, and they belly flopped in their pursuit of Alistair Clarkson, who eventually went to North Melbourne. Now, he's obviously been or stood himself down as well, pending that investigation over some of the incidents that went on with Indigenous players when he was there at Hawthorn. But anyway, back to Essendon. So the Herald Sun's published this sermon this week, and within a day, new chief executive gone.
Unbelievable story, Middo. And this Andrew Thorman, he's the chairman of this City on a Hill church, and their stance is anti-gay and anti-abortion, and he refused to step down as chairman of this church. And once he refused to step down, obviously this position with the Essendon Football Club became untenable. But you've got to ask yourself the question, why didn't they do it before all this stuff came out?
They said they didn't know. They had no idea. The Essendon, David Barham, the chairman, said that they only became aware of these views and comments when they were published in the Herald Sun this week.
You talk about due diligence.
And you've got to ask everything now, don't you?
A thorough process. And that's what I heard them say when they signed him.
Yeah, incredible.
A rigorous process, thorough.
It's been
every other buzzword you want to come up with.
Disarray at that club. It is interesting, though, isn't it? Any sort of public...
So this is going back how far?
2013. Not.
But he's still involved in the church today. We must stress that. And because he won't stand down from his role with the church, they are now saying he's just untenable.
Yes.
So his views were made back in 2013.
Yeah.
But he'd still have those views today, personally, I would assume, if he's still involved with the church.
Well, he just says, I'm choosing my faith over the job.
Yes.
But, you know, goes on to say in a statement that he, you know, loves and respects everyone, etc. But essentially he's chosen his church over the job, yes.
Oh, well, I mean, if that's what he's done, he's made that right decision. I think it's a great decision from Essendon. The fact that they've decided to part ways with him. I mean, this would have split the club. That's the thing. It would have split the club. Mm. So they're trying to heal from 2013 when the Asada scandal happened. Yep. Was that 2013?
Oh, yeah, 12-13.
I still don't think they've recovered from that.
Mm.
They've had a lot of drama recently, and if you throw this guy in as CEO of the club, I don't think you heal at all.
Well, you're just getting more negative attention, aren't you?
Bigger division.
Yeah.
Bigger division in the club.